The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes.
An interesting story today. You can find it on the Bloomberg Terminal. You can find it on Bloomberg.com. The headline is GE sees solar cheaper than fossil power in 5 years. In fact, this story written by Brian Wingfield says that GE's global research director, Mark Little, is saying that solar could be cheaper than electricity generated by fossil fuels and nuclear reactors within 3 to 5 years because of innovation. So, again, if you're waiting for the day when renewable clean energy is in front of you and you're using it and it's cheap enough, et cetera, you may be a little too late on some of your investments. I think that's what we're going to hear from our next guest. Neil Auerbach is the founder and head of Hudson Clean Energy Partners, which is a private equity firm that invests in dynamic and fast-growing clean energy markets. He was not always a granola-crunching, tree-hugging, renewable kind of guy. Just kidding, Neil. First of all, welcome.
Thank you.
But pleasure. I think it's fun, rather than me telling your whole story, to make people understand that you were, you know, your typical Wall Street guy. You know, when you were at Morgan Stanley, you were doing debt and derivatives and stuff, right?
Absolutely. Yes. I was actually trained back in the old days as a lawyer, and after working for clients in the investment banking community, decided to become one of them. This goes back about 16, 17 years ago. About 10 years ago, actually 12 years ago, I joined Goldman Sachs and rose through the ranks, became a partner there. And I was in charge of a business unit that was investing in illiquid and structured securities. Had a small couple of billion dollar balance sheet, part of the trillion plus balance sheet of Goldman Sachs. And we were looking for ways to drive revenues off of the balance sheet by investing in illiquid and structured securities. And one of the places we looked was in the Internal Revenue Code to find attractive tax benefits that would accrue to our bottom line. And lo and behold, about 9 years ago, we were starting to look, and we found that the renewables area of the energy industry was supported by tax credits. And I asked one of my chief lieutenants, go out and find us some deals in this space. And that was about a tenth of the size of the industry today. And it was mainly granola crunchers and Goldman Sachs.
What a nice combination. But let's throw in another part of your background, which is you just happened years and years ago to have worked for the IRS. And so you yourself have also got from that and certainly have this sense of the tax code and how it works.
Absolutely. And so it was a useful combination to understand how the tax code worked and also how to understand how the fundamentals of finance worked. And that's what my business was in large part. I was doing derivatives. I was investing in a variety of structured securities and had the ability to invest in areas of our economy that would provide a tax benefit. So we had to understand how to structure it the right way so that Goldman could approve it.
So in the beginning, when you looked at it, you weren't thinking, oh, renewable energy is going to just really soar and we're going to see Mark Little from GE saying how quickly it's getting viable. You were thinking, how can we use the tax code to legally, of course.
Absolutely.
To make some money. And it wasn't about you're hoping to save the planet or anything like that.
Not at all the time. It was a tiny industry at the time. It was fascinating, but we never envisioned it would be this big, this fast. And so we were in there with just a few other financial institutions experimenting, really trying to get comfortable to generate a couple hundred basis points extra on our balance sheet, and that's what it was all about. And so what we were doing was lending to wind farms and claiming the tax credit so that we can drive our returns higher than our traders were able to get or the liquid part of our balance sheet. And we were very successful at it for a while.
Well, and you did one of the first really big deals in this space, right?
Well, we did. You see, what happened was very quickly from the period of 2002 to 2005, people started finding out about this and we had a lot more competition. And so with margins starting to compress, we had to get more innovative, and we started buying wind farms, and then we started buying developers. And one developer we bought back in early 2005, we labeled Horizon Wind Energy. And 2 years later, Goldman Sachs sold that company at a $1 billion profit, roughly. So wow. It was getting big at the time. And that kind of rapid growth has, I think, typified what has gone on in this industry for the past 10 years. Roughly 10x growth in renewables around the world. Solar, which you mentioned in the GE analyst making the prediction, 3 to 5 years it'll be cheaper than coal. The solar industry has actually grown by 10 times in about 5 or 6 years. And so no wonder that costs are coming down so fast. Economies of scale are finally starting to be felt in a very, very powerful way.
Tell us about making that transition. I mean, you must have had, if you're Goldman Sachs, you don't leave that job easily. So obviously there was a point when you said, this thing is growing. I can see the prospects. I'm going. I'm even taking people with me because I'm so convinced this is a place to be.
Absolutely. It took a while to really think it through, but my ambition at the time was to build my own firm. As so many partners at Goldman Sachs have made this transition, I saw that as my next destination, and it took a while to think about it and to decide that this space was the one that I was going to focus on, because I actually was running a number of businesses at Goldman Sachs, and the alternative energy business, as it was called at the time, was just one of them, but it was the one I was the most passionate about, and then decided to really focus my efforts and to build my own firm with partners. Two of the people that I brought with me are now partners at Hudson today, and we have a much larger firm. But we didn't know how big this would be. And, you know, at the time I left, we actually had invested in two companies. One was Horizon Wind that had not been sold yet, and another was First Solar. And First Solar at the time was another interesting story, because our opportunity to invest in that company really came as a result of a tragic circumstance, the death of John Walton in an airplane accident. He was a pilot and unfortunately passed away. His estate was frozen, and he was supporting this little company, First Solar, for a long time. So they needed another source of capital to build a plant in Europe, and along comes Goldman Sachs, and I made that investment. Well, that investment made something like 10 plus times a return for Goldman. It was the right time to put money into that company. The stock soared after it went public and is today one of the most prosperous solar companies in the world and doing a phenomenal job leading the industry down a low-cost path. We saw that at the time. We didn't know it was going to be that successful. So along comes those success stories as I'm raising money for the fund. And of course, that helped catapult us to a very successful close.
You're passionate about the field. Are you passionate about it as a business proposition? Obviously. But to what extent, be honest, how much do you care about the environment? Is that part of your passion?
Absolutely. It is. But my passion is actually to make environmental investments truly successful on their own terms. Isn't it great if we can actually do well and do good at the same time? And that's really core to the ethos of our firm. We're focusing on investment opportunities that are not solely reliant on a subsidy, on a handout. It's really about the future, not just of this country, but of the world. The world will run out of fossil fuels as a source of energy sooner or later. There are 1.4 billion people in China that are clamoring to be part of the middle class. China is already producing more cars. More cars are being sold in China by far than the United States. And the penetration there of cars per person is just a fraction of what it is in the United States. When there are 500 million people in the middle class, and most of those people are driving cars, how are they going to pay for their gasoline? So we have to make some fundamental changes in the way we think about our energy mix. And we have to start thinking about it now. And it's already happening. So being a part of this, in which we can actually create environmental benefit, we can also produce economic growth, and also ensure in a secure energy future for the United States and for other countries in the world that care about it, is really at the core of our investment thesis.
Okay, let's look at one of the things you've kind of touched on it a bit, but let's go head on to government policy and tax credits and subsidies and how much solar, wind, for example, depend on those. Now, I know that Well, but maybe I should let you say that, because I think one of the answers you always get is, but wait a minute, Kathleen, all these other energy sources get subsidies and tax breaks too.
Absolutely. Look, I believe that environmental concerns can drive a demand for more clean energy by themselves. But isn't it wonderful when we look at the evidence here that the key renewable resources are coming down cost curves that are so rapid that are clearly justifying the public investment in the scale-up? Now, if you look at the amount of money that the federal government has spent on energy for the last 50 years, renewables take roughly, excluding hydro, 6 to 8% of that. The majority go to fossil fuels and have gone, and even today. And so renewables are catching up. To say that we are hooked on subsidies is really just to point out a historical fact that we've started late, but we're coming down so much faster. And as this GE analyst has said, and as we see from our own work and the companies that are in our portfolio right now today, we can see over the next 5 years continuing competition coming from renewables to really battle for key positions in the energy mix of the world over the next 10 years.
My guest this hour is Neil Auerbach. He is the founder and head of Hudson Clean Energy Partners. He, if I may sum him up, is a tax attorney turned Goldman investment banker who is now running this private equity firm, which is investing in renewable energy, clean energy, particularly in wind and solar in the United States and around the world. I was looking at the list of companies. You're in Spain and you're getting ready to do some big investments in China. You're all over the place.
Absolutely.
And you just got back from Iceland.
Absolutely. That's right. So we're going where the money is. I can't say that a lot of the money is in Iceland right now, but it certainly is in China, as the rest of your audience knows quite well. China has actually grown dramatically. When I started Hudson back in 2007, they were just a blip on the radar screen. Last year, they installed more than twice as much as the United States did in clean energy. And they're going strong in their 12th five-year plan that was just released about 2 months ago. Five of their seven key industries are related to or directly on point in clean energy. So they have to do it because their economy is growing at 10% a year, and they're trying to create energy efficiency to slow down the growth of their energy supply. But their energy supply needs to grow at about 5% a year. As we said in the last segment, you've got all these people in China that are clamoring to be part of the middle class, and they need automobiles, and they run on petroleum products. So they need alternative
energy. Well, they want to run, power their factories and everything else. And I think that's an interesting point because many people do look at the whole push for clean and renewable energy from a very important angle. We want to have a clean environment, right? We want to have sustainability. But when we just think of something even more pragmatic, which is the cost of energy, one of the big clouds hanging over the U.S. economy right now is this move up in gasoline prices, right?
Absolutely.
And that, I think, is one of the points you have made over and over, that it's in our national interest, our economic interest, to be investing here because we have to drive the cost of energy down as much as we can, just like the Chinese.
Absolutely. And, oil is really the big issue today. People are feeling it at the pump. And a lot of what we're focusing on at Hudson is really around electricity. So it's not exactly on point, but here's the key, and here's where they're related. The best way that we've seen so far, and we're not picking investments right now on the air, but the electric vehicle holds enormous promise to be a game changer. You can't walk into a dealer today and walk out with an EV. You have multi-month waits for the models that are out today. The demand is skyrocketing. And our forecast is that the cost of the battery, which is really expensive today, is going to come down by about 80% over the next 5 years. And I've been to factories in China. I've spoken to some of the leaders in the United States. A combination of economies of scale and technology are going to bring down the cost of the batteries. And then we just have to scale up the infrastructure to be able to house millions of electric vehicles. It'll take a while. But now you're starting to shift the demand for transportation fuel from liquid form to electrons in the electricity mix. And that's a game changer, and it also helps renewables.
And you were talking about one of the companies you're investing in out in Oregon, which is going to get a loan guarantee, right, from
Absolutely.
The Energy Department. And I know that they have a major program they're administering. And again, that's something that doesn't necessarily cost taxpayers. But let's talk about, I called them Federal Reserve auctions. We mean federal reverse auctions. On this show, we talk so much about the Federal Reserve, but we're talking about reverse auctions. You're going to be testifying on Congress about this. What's a reverse auction and why is it so important?
Absolutely. Well, a reverse auction sounds more mysterious than it is. In a normal auction, a seller wants to sell something and invites a number of buyers to bid. In a reverse auction, a buyer wants to buy something and invites a bunch of sellers to sell. And so the idea of a reverse auction for energy is that someone who wants to buy power, in this case, will invite a bunch of sellers. So what we've been working with members of Congress, working an idea that actually has its roots far, far back, but a bunch of Republicans, interestingly, have picked up on this idea to say, let's make government expenditures more efficient. The tax code is the place where the federal government has been incentivizing renewable energy deployment. And it's done very well. I'm not complaining about it. But if you really study quite deeply into the way it works, you find that there's a tremendous amount of inefficiency. The reason for that is most renewable energy generators cannot utilize the tax credit. So they have to go to somewhere else in order to get to sell that tax credit, and there are around 10 financial institutions, more or less.
Why can't they use a tax credit? If the tax credit is for renewable energy, why can't they use it?
Well, because of the fact that they have so much capital that they're putting in, and you get a rapid depreciation deduction on your capital goods, and you're also deducting your interest expense, you're generating net operating losses even if you have a very profitable power plant. And so the tax credits on top of that are just too much to bear, so you have to sell them. Most of renewable energy projects in the United States have worked that way. So you have roughly 10 financial institutions creating this little oligopoly. And more or less, there have been studies on how inefficient it is. It's not known precisely. But let's say 35 to 40 cents of every dollar of tax credit is spent in transaction costs getting those tax credits placed. So the idea of the reverse auction is actually novel. What it does is it puts the federal government in the place of auctioning off those tax credits, but they're no longer tax credits. It's going to be done as a regular cash transfer run by a private corporation or an arm of the federal government. There are different ways of doing it, and you do it every quarter, and basically the generators bid for it. It's cash, so it eliminates the middleman, and it also introduces competition so that the federal government is bearing only the amount of burden necessary to get the desired deployment, which is happening with increasing pace, and ultimately it should be at lower cost. So it's a smart way to grow renewable energy. And in H.R. 909, which is the bill that the Republicans have sponsored, what they're saying is let's take new oil and gas royalty revenues for offshore drilling. Even the president has suggested that we ought to do more of that. And let's put that money into a trust fund. And then let's have that trust fund be the place where the cash comes to support this reverse auction concept. And it should be done much more efficiently than today's tax credits. Now, we don't want Congress to eliminate the tax credits. What we want to do is see this phased in slowly, see it emerge as a much smarter way to do business in renewables.
Could you quantify, is there a way to quantify the amount of tax credit, various kinds of supports renewable energy gets vis-a-vis petroleum-based energy?
Yeah, I've got the numbers here, but it's roughly, today, it's roughly about 20% of the amount, 20 to 25% of the amount that is going to to fossil fuels. Now, the tax code, we're not going to explain all the intricacies of the tax code to this audience, and I have a hard time keeping it all in my head, but there are many ways in which the federal government creates incentives for oil and gas. You know, interestingly, shale gas is in the news. It's in the news a lot. It's not well known that for 22 years there was a tax credit for unconventional drilling for shale gas. And that certainly played an important role. It went from 1980 to 2002 and played an important role in the shale gas revolution that we see today. So tax credits work. We just want them to work most efficiently. And in the case of renewable energy today, I think there are smarter ways to get more bang for the buck, higher impact, lower cost.
There's a lot of very cheap natural gas out there. Is that a threat to, a competition to clean energy type companies? And, oh, by the way, what if crude oil prices fell too? I mean, seems like, is that a threat to this kind of development of the industry?
Well, look, competition is a threat, just like, you know, for Bloomberg, having another radio station is a threat. But we're in business to make money and to justify our existence by doing good things, by creating good products, by cheapening the cost of our energy.
I had a question from a listener. Let's see if we can answer this one quickly, because we were talking about electric cars and you were saying how what a big burgeoning market is. You got to wait in line for months to get one. Okay, how do you make the electricity for the electric cars? It doesn't come out of thin air. It's not pollution-free.
Absolutely. And that's why it actually pairs well with renewables. First of all, yes, we have coal-based electricity in this country. Roughly 50% of the electricity fleet is coal. But with an increasing percentage of our fleet coming from renewables, that demand, that new demand, will come from renewables as well. And so it doesn't mean that there are no carbon emissions when you have an electric car, but you definitely cut down on carbon emissions dramatically. And we're also weaning ourselves off of foreign oil. Oil, period, but foreign oil. So it touches on the environmental concern, and it also touches on the energy security concern.
And on the money aspect of this, again, we can't invest unless we have lots of money in your private equity ventures. But what about somebody who's saying, okay, I get it. I can see the potential. I want to learn more. I may want to put some money in this space. Where should I go?
Well, there may be some ETFs that you could look at that track the New Energy Index, which is one of the key indices that pay attention to the sector. And there are about 88 stocks, I believe, in that index last time I checked. There are a number of IPOs that are being promoted. And if you're really more adventurous, you can invest in some of the IPOs that seem to be quite hot. I believe in particular that wind and solar stocks are undervalued. If you look at solar stocks today as a class, they're trading at roughly 13 PE multiple. So relatively cheap considering the growth rate that we've seen in this industry. So I'm not sure about the next 12 months and how much growth we're going to see in the next 12 months. We're not going to see quite as much as we've seen over the last 3 years. But the long-term horizon for solar is amazing. We're going to see dramatic growth continue in the solar industry. And so I believe it's a great long-term bet.
I have a friend who may even be listening who was going to looked into putting solar panels on his house 5-6 years ago when he was redoing it. And so now whenever we mention solar, he says, it's not cost effective. Solar's never going anywhere. But we were saying during the break, maybe if he checked now, he would find a huge difference in the cost of solar panels.
Absolutely. We get emails once in a while from friends that remark, certainly with state and local benefits that are available in different places in the country, that sometimes you can get to near zero cost. Now, I'm not saying that that makes great economic sense, but I will tell you that the cost of residential solar is half of what it was 3 or 4 years ago, and it's going to come down again. Will it come down by half? I'm not sure, but it's coming down much faster than we've seen over the last several years. And so it's going to get cheaper and cheaper. I wouldn't delay the purchase forever, but if you want to have it, now's the time to start looking.
And to get back to this point of stocks, solar stocks being undervalued, is it possibly because people are concerned that in a budget-cutting time at state and federal levels, that some of these tax credits, some of these subsidies may vanish, and that changes the profit equation?
Yeah, absolutely. And I view that as short-term volatility. And it's a reason why some of the institutional traders have traded out of those stocks. There have been adverse pieces of data that's coming out of Europe, Southern Europe. Italy had slowed down their solar program, but they're now back on. Spain had slowed down theirs, France theirs. But again, if you look at the long term, installation growth has grown dramatically. It's 10x up over the last 5-6 years. It won't grow 10x in the next 5 years, but it's going to continue to grow dramatically. It's coming down in price, and it's becoming more ubiquitous. And so the long-term future here is very, very good for the solar industry. So if you have a 3 to 5 year horizon, I believe that this is a very good entry point into the sector.
Well, Neil, it was a pleasure having you on the show today. I think you helped us all think a lot more about clean energy, renewable energy, not just as something that would be good for us, but something that would like make us some money as well.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me here.
Well, we appreciate it. We look forward to having you back. Thanks so much to Neil Auerbach. He's the founder and head of Hudson Clean Energy Partners. And thank you for joining us today.
You can subscribe to Bloomberg's premium podcast service at Bloomberg.com/Tom Keene and listen to The Hayes Advantage weekdays at noon Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM satellite radio channel 113. Copyright 2011 Bloomberg LP.